Hello, I'm Matt, and this is episode 4 of the Plus One podcast. We are to the world of theatre what Monty Python's Spanish Inquisition sketch is to the real Spanish Inquisition. In each episode, I'll be discussing a current London theatre production with my press night Plus One, which means whichever of my friends, colleagues, or fellow inquisitors fancied having their night's entertainment subsidised by the PR industry. Representing said PR industry and ensuring that I'm making the most of said subsidy is my Plus One for this episode, Ridda Hack. Ridda studied English and creative writing at the University of London and has been climbing the shiny, slippery PR industry ladder ever since, aspiring towards a career in digital PR. And in case you're not sick of hearing those two letters yet, I'd just like to add PR, 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 PR. Ridda and I ran all the way to the Bush Theatre on Monday, after slightly misjudging our travel times, to see a double bill whose title we weren't sure at first how to pronounce. Warning! From the very start, the following contains a white grammar school-educated Englishman trying to wrap his tongue around a foreignish-sounding surname.
We're in the O'Neills next to the Bush, having just come out of the Stefan Goloszewski plays. How's my pronunciation?
Very dirty. I think it's better than mine.
He only said it a couple of times in the first show, but I'm pretty sure that's good. I've been saying Stefan Goloszewski, which appears to be very wrong.
Goloszewski,
yeah. But yeah, I'm pretty sure from his pronunciation it's Goloszewski. The Stefan Goloszewski plays. Consisting of Stefan Goloszewski talks about a girl he once loved, and Stefan Goloszewski is a widower, which ran at Edinburgh 2 consecutive years, and this is the first time they've ever been seen together as a double bill, which I think works.
Definitely, I think so.
I don't think it would have worked at the Fringe, and it does work here. It's what's different about the environment is that the Fringe one-hour plays work. One-hour plays is the kind of the basic unit of the Fringe. Any longer than that and you lose people's attention. Whereas here at the Bush, even though it's kind of the fringe of London theatres, it's still putting them both together gives you a bit more of a meaty evening of theatre. 1 hour would be a bit unsatisfying, you reckon?
Yeah, I completely agree. I liked that you kind of had the before phase of his youth or adolescence.
Yeah.
And then the interval, which you could kind of fill in yourself, and then he sort of went back and recounted at the time he was, 79 or something?
Yeah, and then because these are semi-autobiographical, autobiographical, possibly fictional monologues where he's playing himself. So the first one is about the first girl he fell in love with, or a girl he fell in love with when he was 18, did he say?
Yeah, I think he was 18.
Fell in love with her in a pub and lost her 24 hours later in circumstances we won't give away.
Absolutely.
And then the second, Stefan Goloszewski is a widower, takes you up to his old age. And so it's set in the future. The second one is more obviously fictional because obviously it hasn't happened yet.
I liked all the kind of idiosyncratic moments, especially in the first play.
He's got a very literate script writing voice and a kind of very literate delivery.
Yes.
In that his similes, his metaphors, the way he describes things are kind of cliche free.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that they're often quite striking phrases, which you do remember, such as the applause of the rain on an umbrella.
Yeah, it's just nice little different ways of describing things, which has that. There were times when I thought it got maybe a bit stilted, maybe it was a bit too heightened.
Yeah.
That it doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like natural talking anymore.
Oh yeah, I agree with that.
But that was a lot more in the second play that I thought that. Possibly because we'd had so. Maybe that's a disadvantage of seeing them both together.
You become so used to his voice and the way he presents that when you encounter that again after the interval, you think it's maybe done a bit too much because you've already had the kind of flowers.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, that it's having it all so much. Yeah, so much in such a short period of time. Yeah. You can get it. you can get tired of it. I don't know whether it's...
I still enjoyed it. I could tell it was coming, I could tell the style, but I went along with it and I absolutely loved it.
I felt myself getting a bit tired of it near the beginning of Stefan Goluszewski as a Widow. Mm. And not so much of the language, because I'm a fan of anything that kind of describes something in a new way, makes you kind of see things in a new light. But more his delivery.
Yeah, the kind of the building up and then the kind of rapid fire of information.
His kind of wide-eyed innocent enthusiasm about women. I thought we had so much wide-eyed innocent enthusiasm about the girl of his dreams in Stefan Goluszewski Speaks About a Girl He Once Loved.
Yeah.
That when the first 10 minutes of Goluszewski as a Widower were consisted mostly of that as well, I felt like we'd had a bit much of it already.
But I like the way it developed and moved away from that.
It did. And there was, again, we don't want to give it away, but there was a moment about 10 or 15 minutes in when suddenly everything changed. And I thought suddenly, oh my God, this is going all Neil LeBute. a reference you get?
No.
No, Neil LeBute writes kind of punchy monologues, generally kind of half an hour to an hour, about... He had one
dark
about
subject.
Yeah, about really, really dark events happening.
Okay.
And it kind of veered into that. It started veering into that territory, which I thought was the strength of Widower, for short, was that it went new places.
Yeah.
Having had that fear at the beginning that it was retreading the same stuff again, and I was thinking, oh God, we're going to get the same play twice. He opened up a whole new emotional range. For the second play, we were seeing Stefan Goluszewski does bitterness, and all these other kind of, like, we had the wide eyed youth at the beginning, and then we go into the bitterness of old age at the end. So I thought, as a kind of an arc of his life, it does work.
I think it does. Yeah.
Another advantage of seeing them twice is both back to back. You see, it's not only the development of Stefan Goluszewski, the fictionalised Stefan Goluszewski as a character. You see the development of his kind of dramatic style, because you have the props in the first one. Do you want to just describe how the props
come about? He builds on an image and then suddenly shifts it with a prop.
Yeah, he'll be describing something and whip out a prop, he has a bag of props at the back, which will just suddenly whip one out at opportune moments. But then in Widower, we get the sinister culmination of these props with him coming out
in a much kind of more measured way, in a way, and yet in a very destructive manner as well.
Yeah, whereas in the first one, in Speaks About a Girl He Once Loved, he brings out props and it's kind of life-affirming or amusing. And then he brings out props in Widower and it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, really, really is.
When he's throwing presents
all over the stage. Quite about the time that he does it.
Yeah, because it starts off as being... This is one of the strongest moments of Widower, I thought. It starts off in exactly the same format as in Speaks About a Girl He Once Loved, where he comes out and he comes out of a box, he pops the box open, the box has something amusing in it. It's one of the dogs that do backflips. But the tone of the monologue just before that moment makes it completely inappropriate to make that kind of joke that worked so well in the first book. And then it's done over and over again.
I think that's kind of the strength of putting the two back to back, that juxtaposition of the humorous nature in the first and the way you can't take it the same way in the second because of what comes before and after.
And running themes between the two, the kind of the fact that you can see it's the same character, the hand holding, that he goes into incredible detail about holding women's hands. And the kind of what that means.
I think in the first one it's not as pronounced, it's kind of just intimacy and touch in general.
Yeah.
Whereas in the second one it very much builds upon that.
And I suppose that's a strength again, is that something very small that meant seeing the two back-to-back gives you that... you can make those connections which you couldn't see if you'd seen them a year apart at the Edinburgh Festivals where they first aired.
I love the kind of directness of how he really made eye contact with a lot of the audience a lot of the time, even in very kind of uncomfortable moments.
Either when he's talking very explicitly about death or explicitly about sex.
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't know quite how to respond, but I think you remain serene for the most part. And I just think that's really affecting in a quite strong way, in fact, he can look you in the eye and talk about those things.
It is a great piece of theatre. It is theatre. It couldn't really be done in any other way.
No.
The thing with monologues is a lot of one man show monologue type things. You can easily see how it could be done just as well as a radio show, and be just as effective as a radio play. That's the worry with monologues, is they will get too wordy.
I think this is very much one for the stage, though.
Yeah, because he has to have that intimacy with the audience because it's anecdotal.
Yeah.
He's relating a story. I mean, it starts off with, I was in a bar.
Yeah, such a dickhead.
Yeah, it practically starts off with, so these guys go into a bar. So relating it to us, we're his friends.
I was thrown off and thinking, maybe this won't be as high caliber as I thought it would be in a way, just because it's like, right, so I was in bar doing this, doing that, and I just thought, okay, this is going to be really rough. I'd seen reviews, and I knew that it was built, but it does kind of unset your expectations from the start.
Yeah, I was about to say something and I've lost it now.
I think his babyish kind of looks also make a big difference to how you take it in, because he just seems so kind of innocent, and as you said, innocent, wide-eyed. He's always in awe of these amazing, incredible women that he encounters in his life. Or fictional, right? Yeah. As you may put it.
Whichever it is. That was it. Talking about his innocence and the fact that he's speaking directly to us, he's making eye contact. It's an anecdote told to the audience, like we're his mates.
Yeah.
And then, again, as you move on to the darker subject matter of Widower, it's almost like he's... It adds to the uncomfortableness. It adds to the discomfort, rather. Because it's like he's a friend who's sort of going off the rails.
Yeah,
and you're not quite sure how to deal with him and how to react.
The odd sort of breakdown scene, which isn't quite a breakdown.
Is this the scene with the presents again?
Yeah, but slightly beyond that.
I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that it doesn't go completely swimmingly with his wife.
Yeah.
And there is a point where to try to win her back or to comfort her through a crisis, his response is to buy her things.
I think it's more her reaction.
Yeah.
And her reaction to him buying all these presents.
Yeah, and so the scene is that he just comes on with these stacks of presents and just throws them all over the stage, and
the way he tries to analyse what she responds, how she responds, particularly.
He overthinks.
Yeah, it's kind of, he tries to rationalise it, and that just shows how off the rails he, a friend would perceive him.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Which I think is a huge strength to the show, because you suddenly see this unravelling of emotions and of sense, and of, it's a bit chaotic, and you really kind of feel that you're in that space with him because of him establishing. And I think more than in Widower, you get that sense of intimacy in like maybe the first 10-15 minutes where he tries to bring you in, but having seen Speaks About a Girl He Once Loved beforehand really drives that kind of fills that down a lot more.
Yeah, because you've already got to know the character. And I suppose that initial 10 minutes where I was starting to get bored made sense.
It made sense
when it was a show on its own. It could maybe have done with being trimmed to see them as a double bill, because it is a kind of rehash, although it's a different woman that he's with now.
I thought he was very convincing as himself, or as his future self. Including all the kind of the fictional pop culture references, they were very throwaway and casual and believable.
Yeah.
Which I particularly enjoyed. They didn't seem contrived.
No, and he didn't fall into the trap of doing, saying, oh, and so we went to the wedding in our flying car,
yeah,
or anything like
they
that.
Weren't,
it was little,
they weren't it, kind of cliches.
It was things that you could see. It was things like paper books becoming obsolete,
yeah,
and that kind of thing, which you can definitely see.
But then other
happening.
Things which you've never heard beat. Of, and yet he tried to kind of attach some sort of reference to you,
yeah.
which resulted
yeah, that
quite,
was,
quite
that
a bit
was,
of him. I thought that was clever.
Those moments were strange, and I'm not totally sure what he was trying to do with those moments where he would say, oh, do you remember this thing that happened in 2028? Or do you remember this character from the bill who isn't in the bill yet? And I suppose that's adding, again, to this weird alienation
of
the audience, that we're his friends in the first show, and then in the second show we're increasingly distant from him, because he's referring
the
pop culture,
which we should know.
The pop culture references in Speaks About a Girl bring us closer
I
to
like,
him.
I like
and
that
then they
contrast between the two, because in the first one everyone knows what he's talking about.
Yeah,
He's got this privileged information.
Yeah, in Speaks About a Girl he can start the name of a song and he doesn't need to complete it for us to get the joke.
Yeah.
Whereas in Widower we're left adrift. He's making references that we don't.
But again,
understand.
He has that moment. He has that kind of that same structure in a way of beginning something and not completing it, which works.
Yeah.
It works very powerfully on an emotional level. And again, in Widower, I think it's like the. You could say it's kind of been done before in that theme, if that makes sense. I don't think it might make sense.
But I think it's like the use of props, and it's like all the other stuff, but it's a logical continuation of his style, and it.
Yeah.
It's why
it's
they.
No mistaking.
It's why they do, sort of on balance, the two do work stage back to back, because they're of a piece. They're,
yeah, I definitely agree.
You know, they're both monologues, they're both fictionalised versions of him, they're both about love and
they
about women and about intimacy. Yeah, they are, you know. Widower is a direct sequel, if you like, if you want to talk in movie terms, rather than being a separate play. So they do. It is interesting to see them together.
The Stefan Golodziejewski plays are at the Bush Theatre until Saturday the 9th of January 2010. Tickets cost £15 full price or £13 concession. As usual, you can find the online booking link in our show notes, along with a link to the London Theatre blog where my full review should shortly appear. The Plus One podcast is hosted by podbean.com and distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 2.0 England and Wales licence, which means you can copy it, send it to your friends, or perform all the episodes back-to-back, as long as you give credit where credit's due and you don't try to charge for it. That's it for episode 4, so until next time, don't forget that the second one is more obviously fictional.